Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. Well, kind of. Now, you trust the Lead to keep you up to date on important state news and information, and now we'll be doing that more regularly as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on March 18th. And just so you know, some of this information may have changed by the time you've heard it. Now, there is so much news out there right now, it's overwhelming. And this podcast is for you to get the information that matters to you, your family, and your fellow South Carolinians. No hype, no fear, just COVID-19 news and resources to get us all through this. Each episode is structured to give you straight-up information up front, followed by additional context and reporting. A segment with your voices. Yes, we want to hear from you. We're going to have you send us voice messages. We'll have more on that later. And then we'll have resources and tips. And end it all with a little wind down. Can you say namaste? Deep exhale. Now, just so you know, over the course of these episodes, some of the information may sound redundant, but facts matter, people, especially in these critical times. And you can find everything we talk about in our show notes on scetv.org/sclede. And like I mentioned, we set up a voice mailbox to hear from y'all about your daily life, what you're doing to get by, maybe give us some tips or things you think we should know about, and also enlighten us on how self-isolation is working for you. You may even get on the pod. So leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. That's 803-563-7169. Now, currently in South Carolina, COVID-19 is not widespread, according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control, but it will be an extended response by the agency, they said. There has been one death out of 60 cases reported in 14 counties as of March 18th at 4:30 p.m. The majority of these cases have been mild. Now, these case numbers are usually updated by DHEC around 4 p.m. each day. That's because that's when testing comes back for them. Now, this is also when press conferences usually occur, and those can be seen on SCETV stations across the state, and you can also hear it on South Carolina Public Radio stations and online at scetv.org or our social media. Now, here are some key takeaways from the March 17th press conference with Governor Henry McMaster and other state officials. McMaster issued an executive order to close all bars and restaurants and their dine-in services. He also pushed back the state tax deadline to June 1st. He's banned gatherings of 50 or more people in public, city-owned, or county-owned government-owned facilities. And he's also mobilized the National Guard to assist hospitals in planning to build infrastructure in the future. Now, after outlining what his executive order does, McMaster then made several requests, including halting elective and non-threatening procedures for 72 hours, asking insurance companies to cover all the costs associated with coronavirus doctor visits, which usually include a battery of tests before testing for COVID-19, which is covered. McMaster also asked folks to limit purchases of paper products and suggested a designated time for older shoppers to go to stores to limit exposure to the virus from others. And he also pushed private employers to let employees work from home. Here's some additional recent information. Supreme Court Chief Justice Donald Beatty has suspended all jury trials in the state. Non-jury trials and other hearings may continue to be held, but only attorneys, their clients, and necessary witnesses will be allowed to appear. And Beatty has also suspended all evictions in the state through the end of the month. Now, that got boosted today when President Donald Trump said the Department of Housing and Urban Development is providing immediate relief to renters and homeowners by suspending all foreclosures and evictions until the end of April. That moratorium will apply only to homeowners with mortgages insured by the Federal Housing Administration. Now, all schools in the state are closed through March. I know my parents out there don't need me to remind you that. You already know that. But again, you can find information on education plans, Wi-Fi, and feeding sites on your school district's website. And a little later in the episode, we have a story of a feeding operation that's underway in one school district that is not too dissimilar to others happening around the state. But first, we're going to look at some action that happened in the Statehouse this week. Yep, it's the Lead. You are not going to get away from some Statehouse action, folks. State senators have approved a $45 million emergency spending bill for DHEC. That money will go toward protective personal equipment, supplies, staffing costs, and more. Democratic State Senator Vincent Shaheen, whose Senate district is predominantly Kershaw County, which has been the epicenter of the COVID-19 cases in the state, said healthcare professionals in his area are facing supply issues, but it's not with test kits.
We do have a supply problem, and the supply isn't the testing. They have plenty of tests. It is a supply to be able to get the samples to then send to DHEC so that the tests can occur. So, for example, in our local hospital and in our doctor's offices, we have run short of swabs that they use to obtain the samples. We have at one point begun to run short of a protective mask that they were using, at which point I and others called out for help, and we were able to meet that short supply. But I think we need to understand that it's a reality, and we need to be prepared to deal with it. And it's important that this body is prepared to deal with it. And this money, I understand, will help the agency deal with that. But we still have hospitals and providers out there who are struggling to get the supplies they need so that they can take the samples to then supply to be tested. That is a pinch point, as the senator from Gaffney likes to say. That is the pinch point right now.
DHEC Director Rick Toomey told Shaheen and the Senate Finance Committee on Tuesday how the additional funding from the state and also support from the national stockpile will help.
The two things that I'd like to echo a little bit on Senator Shaheen's comments would be, the first, the strategic national stockpile is almost a one-time event. And so, yes, we're concerned also. Once we draw down those resources, there's no more going back to the well. And so hopefully those resources, by the nation time to ramp up the supply, the manufacturing aspects of what is needed, not only in Kershaw, but needed in every county in this state and every county in every other state across the nation. The first thing that we're trying to do within the regards is looking at our retired staff, people that understand how DHEC works, to bring those back on a part-time basis, on an hourly basis. We'll have to juggle the aspects of the state human resources. I have no doubt that we'll be able to work around some of those issues. But finding and the blessing of the, although the blessing of the time right now is very low unemployment. It's hard to find people. That's going to be, I think, changing as we see businesses slow down a little bit. And so we will look to finding individuals that have the expertise or the background that can quickly be assimilated into the DHEC team. And with our within our team structure, within our work structure, we will not be sending out individuals that do not have an understanding. They'll be augmenting our staff in key areas to provide the backup support, the manpower that we need. But that is a challenge.
Now, this is just for your information, just so you guys know, but DHEC talked about this during the Finance Committee meeting. They do not track the conditions of patients with COVID-19 due to health privacy laws, and they only find out about deaths when a certificate is issued specifying the virus was the cause of death. But DHEC's control physician, Dr. Brandon Trexler, gave senators some insight about what recovery looks like.
The best data we have still suggests that 14 days is really the key point. In regards to the two tests within, 24 hours apart, the CDC actually came out with some new guidance just last night under the cover of darkness that I've only quickly read, that Senator Shaheen and I were discussing earlier, in regards to clearing patients who have been confirmed as a case. Generally, the thought had been that once they were asymptomatic for at least 24 to 72 hours without medications to bring down their fever, et cetera, then you would do two tests at least 24 hours apart, and they both needed to be negative before we considered that patient to be not contagious. The new guidelines from this and recommendations from the CDC that came out last night give an option, in addition to the two tests, to looking at length of time, 72 hours past the last point of fever. And so that is something that our medical consultants are looking at and reviewing that guidance that I said we just encountered this morning to review, but that's the latest data.
House lawmakers are expected to pass the $45 million emergency spending bill on Thursday and send it to the governor. Now, senators also took up a continuing resolution measure on Tuesday, which is a measure to help keep the state government funded and operating at the current fiscal year budget levels. Now, this is seen as a last resort should lawmakers not be able to pass a budget before the state's new fiscal year, which begins July 1st, which is about 105 days from now. Now, Finance Committee Chairman Hugh Leatherman pushed the measure as the prudent thing to do since the foreseeable future is uncertain. Some senators say it sends the wrong message that lawmakers wouldn't be working. Larry Grooms, a Republican senator from Berkeley County, summed up several of the known unknowns facing lawmakers who are required to pass a balanced budget every year.
Let's face it, the world's different than what it was 3 weeks ago. The revenue estimate that the House passed that budget on, it's gone. You might as well just rip the whole thing up. We have a shutdown in our nation. We're having a shutdown within our state. We've got small businesses that don't have customers. We've got restaurants that don't have customers. We've got hotels that are empty. The revenue estimate for the state of South Carolina is nothing close to what the BEA said just 3 weeks ago, and we don't know how much worse it will be. The second quarter of this year, the revenue estimate is going to be way off than what the BEA projected. We might even have a shortfall in this year's budget. And to be able to move forward collectively as if the economy hadn't been affected would be one of the most foolish things this General Assembly could have ever done. We need to understand what the economy is going to look like. And right now, we don't know. We're not going to know that in 2 weeks. We're not going to know that in 3 weeks. And I don't know how we build a budget going forward if we don't know what our revenue estimates will be.
And after an 18-3 vote to get it out of the Senate Finance Committee, a floor vote is still pending. The announcement that many parents statewide dreaded came on Sunday, and that was that schools would be closing to limit the spread of COVID-19. Superintendent Molly Spearman spoke at the press briefing about the monumental task ahead.
I first want to assure all the parents of school children in this state that we are still in a partnership, and principals, superintendents, teachers are working together as we speak to prepare to continue instruction for your children, and also to be sure that those who need to be fed will be fed.
Days later, it was organized chaos at Blaney Elementary School in Elgin. On Wednesday morning, there was a large army of female cafeteria workers and bus drivers organizing 5,300 meals to go out to students in Kershaw County School District. And that doesn't even include the number of meals picked up at schools. It was a ballet of carts and coolers full of milk, regular for cereal, and chocolate milk for lunch, boxes filled with bagged lunches of food. It was an incredible sight to see, and it took less than an hour to get 51 buses packed and on the road to keep children who have been home from school since Monday and will remain home through the month fed. And if you think that sounds crazy, well, this scene is playing out every morning, and not just in Kershaw, but districts across the state to give anyone under 18 two nutritious meals a day. Honestly, it was like witnessing a mini Berlin airlift, y'all. We salute you, lunch ladies and bus drivers of South Carolina. One of those bus drivers on the front line is Alicia Vestover.
The babies and my coworkers know me by Lee.
Oh, sorry, Lee. And Lee said the entire operation has her in high spirits ever since the order was given to close schools.
So today, and until the kids get ready to go back to school, we're going to be delivering lunch and breakfast to our regular bus stops. But any kid under 18 can come and get lunch or breakfast. Well, lunch and breakfast. And I mean, honestly, like, it's actually good because, like, for some kids in the district, this is their only mean of food. It's from the school and stuff like that. And at the same time, like, this is a lot of kids' only positive atmosphere is the school. So to see the kids' faces, put a smile on their face, also put food in their stomach. For anybody who know me, know I love my school babies. It actually makes me excited, and like to see their face, you know, like that's really gonna have me excited. Cause I was kind of down Friday when we got the call that we were gonna be out for 2 weeks, if not longer. So just to see their faces, yeah, it's definitely gonna put a smile on my face and theirs.
Superintendent Molly Spearman's office said meals will continue throughout the closures and during spring break, and that the U.S. Department of Agriculture also granted a state waiver to allow 5 days worth of meals, which is 10 meals total, to be given out at once. With so many people staying home, the economic outlook for South Carolina is dicey. Remember, we heard Senator Larry Grooms say something similar earlier. Though it's too early to determine what the entire impact of the coronavirus will be on the state and the $22 billion tourism industry, Dwayne Parrish, who's the director of South Carolina's Department of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, gave us some insight.
This is all uncharted territory. I've never seen anything change so quickly in my life, from one day to the next, and literally in some cases from 1 hour to the next, how much the world can change And unlike a hurricane that hits the coast, it has a defined area of some sort, at least on a spaghetti model. It has an end date. You know it's going to stop. This, hard to see the end date right now, and it's like a hurricane is hitting the entire country, or in some cases, the entire world. And so it has affected domestic travel, global travel. It has hit nearly everything it could. Business has dramatically gone down. This week, I expect hotel occupancy statewide to hover around 20 to 30%. This time of year normally would be 70%. So a lot of these hotels are small businesses, same for restaurants, same for bars, same for attractions. This is a difficult time for people. This is normally spring when, you know, the temperature warms up, the rain stop, and the spring flowers come out, and people travel a lot, and that's obviously been dramatically diminished. And so, yeah, we've got our work cut out to, A, get through this, and B, bounce back as quickly as we can.
But even with the guidance from health officials to socially distance, self-isolate, and avoid large groups, not everyone was following that advice. I went out on the last night bars were open in South Carolina. And not for a Gavin good time, but just to work, folks. It was also coincidentally St. Patrick's Day. But more importantly, it was Cameron's birthday.
Oh, well, I'm Cameron Long. It's my 21st birthday on St. Patrick's Day, yeah. I had, you know, the whole weekend planned, but it got ruined because of the coronavirus, but trying to make the most of it.
Let's paint this picture. It's 11:30 on a Tuesday night in Five Points, which for anyone not in Columbia, well, it's a bit of a rowdy Wild West-like entertainment district. And with her posse of friends, Long had her birthday girl sash over her green t-shirt that said Sassy Lassie. And as for one of her friends, well, she has just the plan for the night, which also happens to be the last night bars are open in South Carolina for the foreseeable future as a way to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
So I'm here tonight because it's actually her 21st birthday, panda her. And you know, we were supposed to go to Atlanta this weekend, but that's canceled. So you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna make tonight the best night of her life, and then this weekend.
It's ETV, you can't say that.
Oh, I'm gonna make ETV. Tonight the best night of her freaking life. And then this weekend, I'm gonna make everything Atlanta worthy. Clubs in our apartment, Cheesecake Factory in our apartment, alcohol in our apartment, period.
Usually Five Points is bustling, even on a Tuesday night, but that night it was pretty scant, even with Long and her friends. There were short lines out of only a few bars, which are frequented primarily by college students. Patrons out in Five Points were younger, so naturally not as worried about the COVID-19 virus as are older people or those with underlying medical complications. Walking by Bird Dog, one of the only bars with a line, the young crowd inside was belting Bon Jovi in what sounded like a bit of foreshadowing to these sober ears. Don't get me wrong, it looked like an absolutely carefree blast. But we're living in times now where fun is being redefined, whether we like it or not, because things are changing. Hashtag we're all alone together. Trivia nights, happy hours, and grabbing just one drink, okay, isn't happening anymore in South Carolina. And this is happening in states and major cities across the country. Now here's a quick quorum call style Q&A with health professionals. While some people compare this to the flu, it's worth noting that what makes this COVID-19 virus so dangerous is that there is no vaccine, no herd immunity to make it like the seasonal flu yet. Now here's Senate President Harvey Peeler asking about the flu versus COVID-19 and Dr. Brandon Trexler's response.
My constituents also want me to compare this with the flu. I'm not an expert. The heck is. Will you compare this with the flu? And I'm not asking for numbers. I'm just... They say this is similar to the flu, is it?
So for 4 out of 5 people that contract COVID-19, they will feel similar to the flu. It'll be mild to moderate illness. Most of them will, you know, those folks will not need hospitalization. They will be able to stay at home and they and their loved ones care for themselves, and it may feel very similar. For that fifth person out of five is the one where it's a higher chance than the flu that they are going to need hospitalization, that they're going to need to be put on a respirator, a ventilator to help them breathe, and potentially even be fatal.
So the coronavirus is how much more contagious than the flu virus?
So we look at this number that statisticians and epidemiology use called the basic reproductive number, R0 or R0. And that tells us for this coronavirus, for every person that has it, you can expect between 2 and 3 other people then will contract it. For the flu, that number is closer down to between 1 and 2 people for every one person that's a case.
But you're going to say, Gavin, why does social distancing matter if I'm a healthy person and a social butterfly? Well, listen to Dr. Deborah Birx, the coronavirus response coordinator for the White House Coronavirus Task Force, who has been speaking directly to millennials lately, who, while they are not prone to feeling the effects of the virus, can spread it to those who are more susceptible to it.
I want to speak particularly to our largest generation now, our millennials. I have the mom of 2 wonderful millennial young women who are bright and hardworking, and I will tell you what I told to them. They are the core group that will stop this virus. They are the group that communicates successfully, independent of picking up a phone. They intuitively know how to contact each other without being in large social gatherings. We're asking all of them to hold their gatherings to under 10 people, not just in bars and restaurants, but in homes. We really want people to be separated at this time.
Oof, we just mentioned a lot, and there was plenty more we couldn't even fit in here. But don't worry, because we'll be doing these pods from here on out. This is our new normal. We'll be dropping regular intervals throughout the week as news that we think you need to know happens. So this is our last section, our wind-down section. This is the section where we want to hear from you. And to do that, we need you to call us at 803-563-7169 and tell us how you're coping with all this. Tell us how you're keeping occupied. Share with us some stories of what life is like now, good or bad. How you're juggling work at home, with or without kids, or roommates. What are you watching, reading, doing? I mean, we're all kind of bored here, but also on edge, so any tips or resources you want to throw our way, do it at 803-563-7169. So since we don't have any calls yet, we're going to tell you what we're doing. And AT, our producer and dank meme lord, yes, check out our Instagram, folks, is here to tell me what he's been into and what he's checking out. AT, what's the good stuff?
Okay, I got a sweet, sweet list. I know you do too. So my suggestions are you should read The Alienist by Caleb Carr. Great book. Also an okay show. Forget about that. Or watch The Outsider. I know we both love The Outsider.
Yes.
Great show on HBO.
Disturbing. Great.
If you like X-Files, you like Outsider, right?
Definitely. Get someone's HBO Go password.
Yes, everyone has something. I saw a tweet, too, that said, like, this is the perfect time to change your password so your ex can't use.
Yeah.
So that's good. So, Gavin, what are you doing?
I'm reading a lot of books.
A lot of books, huh?
Yeah, like, a lot of books at the same time, so basically none at the same time.
Yeah.
I've read it's really a great way to do that.
I heard that's the best way to internalize any information.
But actually, this is a good way we can mention this, but I've been getting a lot of books from different publishers, like political science books that I want to review and then talk about on the lead at some point in the future. So there's some interesting ones, including one title called Steadfast Democrats, How Social Forces Shape Black Political Behavior. So very interesting. I wish I could have read it during the primary, but
that was,
you know, a year ago, but still very interesting. And like I said, well, once I get through all this stuff, once we kind of get a good pace going, we're going to start doing some book reviews on the lead because, you know, we're all going to be readers after this.
Reading is fundamental.
Yes. And, you know, and having fun isn't hard when you have a library card. And one great resource out there, that's a little Arthur throwback. And one great resource is the Richland Library. They have like lists on activities that you can do with your kids, book reviews, book recommendations. I mean, they got it stacked. So check out Richland Library. They got you covered out there.
And I'm pretty sure, Gavin, your TV pick is Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. It might be too high stress in these times for me to tune back in. She's always getting into mischief.
We love you guys. We want you guys to let us know that you love or hate us or anything in between. So please call our number. I left a terrible voice message on there. So.
Yes. Don't forget to check out our show notes because there are some great links there. On SCETV.org/SCLEDE. And remember to shut the news off every now and then. Read a book. Call up friends. Get some good laughs in. Do yoga. Go for a walk. Those are some of my favorite things to do. And now I have time to do them once I peel myself off of Twitter. Remember, we can only do so much, and I encourage you to do as much as you can for others as safely as possible. We are here for you, our lead community, and not only on Tuesdays, but throughout the week as this situation continues to unfold. We are in full-scale hashtag lead laugh love mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina.